Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Hey, ladies, welcome back. This is episode 115, and I'm talking to Kari Ann Wood. She's an author, she's a mom, she has teenagers, she has a really interesting story of where she lives and why she lives there. She's a lot of fun, and she has a lot of wisdom. Before we get started, though, I just wanted to tell you, oh my gosh, I've spent this whole, well, I guess it was 2 weeks ago now. I think I spent all last week recovering from the week before when I was at the Revelation Wellness Instructor Training. What a blessing. And I got to tell you, I'm going to be on Elisa Keaton's podcast, Revelation Wellness, again to talk about my experience. I was on it before, and then I'm going back on. So I think I'm like a case study about what is it like when you are not naturally super into fitness, but you know you need freedom in your body, freedom with food, freedom in your identity. Yeah, so that's where I was, and I went through, and guess what, you guys? Fitness is pretty stinking fun. And I even led some stuff, and it turns out I kind of like it. What? I never would have thought that was a thing for this girl. I can tell you, it turned my life upside down. And I haven't talked about it a lot because, you know, like when you go to camp and you're in sixth grade and you come back and you're like, I'll never sin again. It's just ridiculous and not real life. And so I really was feeling like I don't want to sound really emotional and like I'm making a bunch of stuff up. So stay tuned to Elisa Keaton's Revelation Wellness podcast because I'm going to be breaking down some of that experience for you. It really shifted some major things in my life. But I am telling you, if there's even a part of you that's like, I don't know, maybe I should go, you should go. I went to meet with my girls in my community that I do life with from church, and I told them some of the things that shifted that they have been walking with me through for years, and we all just sat there and cried because God is so good. And when you go away and make space and just say, Lord, show up, tell me some things, He was really faithful to do it. I think my concept of God was already pretty large, but this week really blew it up and made it even larger. And I genuinely think differently about myself in light of what I learned about Him this week. I'm never going to sin again. Just kidding. Okay, so in my episode with Kari Ann, we talk about technology in teens, teen relationships among their siblings, how to give consequences that fit the crime, and the importance of modeling the behavior that you want to see in your children. That one's not my favorite. That one's hard. Before we jump in, let me share about my girls at Queen Bee Market. This place, you guys, it kind of kills me that I don't live close enough to go. It is a highly curated artisan market with more than 100 local and national vendors. It's got all the things that we love. Handmade, vintage, clothing, home decor, and paper arts. Every booth that you walk in, it's like totally decked out, like you're in a small shop. It's basically Etsy come to life. Their event includes make and take crafts, live music, fantastic photo areas, like a gigantic letterboard that you can play with and take pictures, and also swag bags. What? You can get all your Christmas shopping done in one day. This event is December 15th and 16th at the Del Mar Fairgrounds in California. So find out more at thequeenbeemarket.com. And somebody get me a ticket out there. This is killing me. So let's go ahead and get started on my talk with Kari Ann. Hey, Kari Ann, how are you today?
I'm amazing. How are you doing?
So good. Will you take just a moment and introduce yourself to all of us?
Yes, my name is Kari Ann, and I write a blog called Thistlewood Farms. I just finished a new book called So Close to Amazing. I live in the middle of Kentucky in a farmhouse that we've completely renovated with four kids and two dogs and cats and deer and tortoises
oh my goodness.
Salamanders.
Salamanders. Ew, that kind of sounds creepy.
It is.
Do you like them?
No, I don't like salamanders.
Yeah. Ugh, I don't like when they get in your house and you can see through them. It's just gross.
No, stop. No.
Sorry. My house has slugs sometimes, and they just like come in twos. It's like they're heading to the ark or something. They always are in pairs for some reason. And one time I saw them when they were slithering past on my calendar. They were going across my calendar right on top of the date I had set for pest control guys to come. It's like they did it on purpose.
I think they were mocking you.
They were. It's jacked up. It's my house. Anyway.
Slugs coming in two by two.
It was so weird. Okay, so I want to talk about your farmhouse. It sounds magical, except for the salamanders. You told me about a family tradition that you have, or that you growing up, where you had to hand make your Christmas gifts.
Yes.
And the examples sounded amazing. I needed to know about this.
We're pretty serious. We take the Christmas gift thing pretty seriously at our house. It all started, oh my gosh, I guess probably maybe 12 years ago.
Okay.
Our family, I'm the oldest of five kids, and you know, it's like the family starts growing and you're like, who do you buy for? Do you draw names? What happens? And so we just decided that we were going to start making our gifts. But here's the thing. We're like a little competitive.
Okay.
And so we couldn't just make gifts like, oh, here's a bar of soap I made, or hey, here's a candle I made. No. We have to like, we have to take it to the next level.
Okay. Because those things sound pretty impressive right there. But that's not, that wouldn't work in your family.
Well, in my family, like, I'll just give you an example. I'm looking at one actually right now across the room. One of my sisters took all of the pieces of paper of our lives. So our graduation announcements, our wedding announcements, old Christmas cards, different parts of our family's history. And she cut out tiny little leaves and made an entire tree out of the pieces of paper.
Wow. And she made one for all of you or just for you? Do you draw names and make the one gift?
No. We have to make one for everybody.
So, oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty serious. My brother, one time, just as an example, there was a tree that was in our yard that fell over, and my brother cut it into pieces and then took the insides out and made bowls for everyone out of the tree.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
It's like, calm down.
Is that a lot of pressure?
Oh, it is, especially because I don't really bring it. Like, they all bring it, and I just take all the presents and accept them because the handmade gift was my idea.
Oh, no. You bring the idea.
I came up with the idea. You see, I write this blog, and I need, like, ideas.
Oh, my goodness. You literally don't bring anything, or do you make something that's just not that good?
I make something that's a little lame.
Wow.
Like, no one is cutting out leaves of paper and making family trees around here.
Is there, like, a winner?
Well, we all know. It's kind of whoever makes the people cry. Like, and there's always a story. It's a big, it's very elaborate. You can't just hand the people, like when my sister handed us that tree, she didn't just hand us the tree. She gave us the tree and then told us the story of our lives and how the tree was woven from pieces of paper from centuries gone by. You know, I mean, you can't ever just hand them the present. It has to, it's a presentation.
Okay, so how do you hand them your lame candle?
I just hand them the candle and say, Merry Christmas.
Here's my lame candle. Thanks for weaving the history of my life together.
But see, my gift to them is my appreciation of their gift.
Oh, and I bet you really just ham it up. So good.
You know it.
So do you do this with your poor four children that have to make up gifts for you, or not really?
We do a little bit. The kids kind of make stuff for me sometimes.
Okay.
My son, actually, now this was a really cool present. He's the oldest. So, you know, he's got a little bit more initiative being first child and all. So he took actually, I write stories on my blog, and he took all the stories and put them in a book from like a photo album kind of away, and had it came back with all the stories from Thistlewood.
That's so nice.
Yeah. So, and last year, I think the twins gave everybody flower crowns. They made flower crowns with like a scripture verse in them. So they are a little bit in. Now, they're not weaving, you know, the family history into trees yet or anything like that.
But that's fine. They'll get there.
I know. They're still young. They're still young. There's time.
That's so funny. Okay. So you told me that you have a pet peeve about the noises in the car. And I just recently interviewed a girl and she said the very same thing. And that is, like, makes me crazy. I have earplugs in the car just because I can't make it stop. So what do you do?
I literally will. I turn around and I give the glare, like, okay. You know, when so someone will be sitting behind me and, you know, there's the like, here, I'll do an imitation of it. Like a tapping, okay. Like a weird tapping. Like, what's the origination from it? Where did that come from? Are they tapping on a device? Are they tapping on the back of the seat? Do they have drumsticks they pulled out of their pocket? Like, what's up?
It's Morse code. They're signaling to somebody.
But I don't say, I don't have to say anything. It's been too many years of, you know, where I've given them the look. So I just turn around and I look, and then the tapping is like this, and I look, and then the tapping just stops because they know it's the sound and they know the look of the mom, and they stop.
Okay. So your kids are older. So the sound goes from like the screaming and the fighting to just like tapping that's annoying, you know, like different, the noises.
Even though they're older, they're still screaming and fighting. Let's not.
Oh, really? Okay. I was going to ask you. So tell me the ages of your kids.
So Denton, the oldest, is 21. And then Zach is 17. And then the twins are 14.
I want to ask all the questions about teenagers because my kids are much younger. But what is their relationship like? Because right now everybody's fighting over, you're looking at me and, you know, just ridiculous nonsense. How does that change as they get older?
To me, it's more concentrated. Like, so what happens is everybody suddenly becomes a little more territorial. Okay. Like when you're little, you're kind of worried about like what's in your hands. Like you worry about like your blocks, or you worry about your binky, or you worry about, your trains or your Barbie dolls. But when you're older, you worry about your room.
Okay.
So people, if they enter the room, you know, there's all kinds of signs. We have a lot of post-it notes that are stuck places giving instructions to their brothers and sisters.
That's so funny. Does anyone ever look at those signs? No.
Well, I look at them when I clean up and think, oh, should I take the post-it note down? Is this wisdom for the ages? Like, what's up?
Do I need to turn this into a tree for someone's Christmas present?
Wait, there's next Christmas.
There you go. You're welcome.
Free of charge.
So they don't like people in their rooms? Is that mainly the thing?
Well, they like them in their rooms at certain times, you know, and what happens is when you have four kids, you have bonding between like two of them will get along great and the other two, and then they switch.
Oh, they do switch. Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of switching going on because the girls are twins. So they're BFFs. Okay. And then sometimes they'll get in a fight and they pair up with, you know, they'll say, oh, now I'm friends with this brother, or, you know, oh, I like mad at you. It's just like when they were smaller, it's just they're a little bit taller.
Okay. How involved do you get in fixing that? Or do you, or just let them be mad at each other or what? Because I want to get up in everybody's business all the time.
Okay. Well, here, I'm with you.
Help me.
We have to be friends now. Here's my thing. I've figured out that time is fleeting. You know, they're only at home for so long. So I have made it my personal mission to dispense as much worldly advice and wisdom in the short years that I have left for them.
I bet they love
so
that.
So if there's like, let's just say we're driving down the road and there's an argument in the back and people are arguing, I pull out my soapbox and I climb up and I lecture for the 20 minutes it takes us to get to Walmart on why people should get together and why everyone in America wishes they had a sister and why can't you get along with your sister. And all over the world, people are wishing that they could drive to Walmart with their mother giving them helpful advice.
I mean, at least they're not fighting with each other because they're listening.
Well, it's silence then. See, it's silence because I remember there's no noise in the car. And there's no talking when I'm on my soapbox. Like, that's the rule.
That's true. Okay. Do you just kind of tell them to stop it, or?
I pretty much tell them. Yeah, I'm from a big family, and the older I get, the more I realize how precious those brother and sister relationships are. Okay. And I treasure that. And so, you know, I'm trying to help my kids understand. Now, we're still in the trenches, so no one's really appreciating anyone yet.
Okay.
But I have hope. I have hope for the future.
Okay. You said that a challenge you have with raising teens is learning what limits to set as they grow. The no's that you give them become more gray, less black and white. Give me an example of that, because I have still a lot of control, or at least it seems like I do.
Well, the challenge comes in is that there's a new social media around every corner. So, you know, you kind of set the limits with Facebook and you set the limits with Instagram. And then all of a sudden out of nowhere, Snapchat shows up with all those filters and, you know, super cute stuff going on. And then everybody wants to be on Snapchat. And who are they friending on Snapchat? So when they were little, you would say, don't do this. There was like a line that you would draw. But when they get older, you know, you set the boundaries, but sometimes the world is coming at them so fast and so quickly that you really have to equip them sometimes to make their own decisions.
Okay. How closely do you monitor their phones?
Oh, like 100. Like I have the, I forget the name of it, but I have the thing where all of their messages come to me. I'm friends with them on Facebook. I'm friends with them on any social media. And we have a rule in our house, actually, at 10 o'clock, the phones stay down on the kitchen counter. They don't go upstairs.
Okay.
And that's a big one. I mean, if you're a parent of teenager, you know, nothing good happens after midnight, like nothing good.
Yeah.
So we have the phones down here to where they're monitored, not up, you know, not upstairs.
And then how closely do you watch like what they do on Snapchat, and how closely do you see what apps they have on their phone and all that kind of stuff?
Definitely with my oldest son, you know, he's away at college. And I think that's the biggest transition part as a parent. I think that you spend all these years monitoring everything they're doing. You know, you're watching and you're monitoring, and then your chicks leave the nest and you hit your knees and you pray that the skills that you've given them and the decision-making and, more importantly, the discernment that you have given them really equips them for the road ahead. But while they're at home, I'm pretty involved with what's going on. I mean, I think you have to be. I think you can never be too careful. People are always figuring out new ways and new social media and new ways to interact on the internet. And you have to be ever vigilant. As a mom of teenagers, you know, it's like it takes up a good portion of my day. You're always trying to stay one step ahead, and then you're trying so hard to stay one step ahead, and then you realize you're like a mile behind.
Okay, so how do you stay one step ahead? What do you do?
I'm fortunate in that my job, probably both our jobs, is we're online a lot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have the advantage of that. I have the advantage. I see what's coming up. Okay. I see what new things are on the horizon. I mean, I'm always, you know, I subscribe to different newsletters and things like that that keep me apprised of what's going on technologically, what's happening in that world. Uh-huh. And so I understand it more than some of their friends' moms.
How often do you have these conversations with them about like, hey, this thing's coming and these are the dangers? Or do you just say you can't do that? Or
I'm always using everything as a life lesson. Like I'm the queen of the life lesson.
Okay.
Like I see something on Facebook, I say, come here. Everyone gather around. And I pull it. Life lesson. Come on. Chip chop. Come on.
Okay.
And I say, this is what happens if you make a poor decision. This is what happens. You know, I mean, I'm always trying to point out, hey, here's what happened when this person made a bad decision.
Yeah.
Let's try to make the best decisions that we can.
Have you seen fruit from that? Does it seem to be sinking in a little bit?
You know what? It's amazing that you asked that question, because here's a really good analogy. When your kids are little and you tell them, hey, say please. You know, they ask for fruit stacks, and you say, what do you say? And they go, and you go, what do you say? And they go, please. And then one day, and you say it over and over, say thank you, say please, say yes, ma'am, say no, ma'am, over and over and over. And then one day, it's like a light bulb goes off and they say thank you all on their own without any prompting. And you literally feel like, I mean, hello, like you're the best mom in the universe. Like your kid said thank you without any prompting. That's a little like giving the life lessons on social media is... Okay. You know, you're in the trenches and you're saying, don't do this, make a good choice here, make a good choice here. Don't do this. Like, don't friend this person on Facebook. Always ask me before you, you know, accept a new friend request. Do this, like those kind of things. And then over and over and over, and you feel like you're in the trenches fighting. And then one day they'll come to you and ask you if something's okay. Like, what do you think about this, mom? Or, and that's the fruit that you see. Okay. It's just like trying to get them to say thank you.
I want to take a moment and tell you about Love Pop. A Love Pop is not just a card, it's an experience in an envelope. These two naval engineers decided to stop designing ships and start making paper cards that are laser cut and they're 3D. So when you open it, up pops up the scene and it's super cool. It's actually an Asian art form called kirigami. Did you even know that was a thing? I did not. Love Pop gives you a reason to do something awesome for the special people in your life, whether it's a wedding wedding or a birthday, you want to say thank you, you want to celebrate some weird thing that your friend likes, Love Pop has you covered. You can even shop in your pajamas. You can order online, they can handwrite the message, and you can get a card sent out from your phone in like a minute. They have more than 250 3D cards. This year, I'm sending out a gingerbread house and a Christmas tree village. And I know my parents are going to be super thrilled because I never send cards. I also tried the snowy owl one, but my kids stole it because it looks like Hedwig, Harry Potter's owl. So that one won't be going to anyone because it was thieved by my children. So to enter the 2018 Love Pop birthday sweepstakes, where you can win like 50 of these cards, go to lovepop.com/MSW. That's lovepop.com/MSW. What if you notice that they like aren't making good choices? It's kind of hard because then you want to say, or at least me, I want to go, no phone ever again until you, which obviously I know isn't practical or whatever. But how do you put those kind of barriers or guardrails on, but then you see them not doing good? How do you know? Do you take it away for a week? Do you take it? I mean, you get them a flip phone or what's happening?
I usually, a flip phone. Oh, whoa. let's not be too harsh here. No, I try to let the punishment fit the offense, if that makes sense.
So yes, for example, explain that to a mom who's like, I don't even understand. Because honestly, for me, I tend to be, because I'm afraid, I want them to be doing so good. So I get afraid. And so then I over consequence because I'm afraid, right? And so tell me how to make that fit.
So I'll give you an example. So this is my son, Zach, when he was, I think he was in sixth grade. I'm not sure exactly, but he had been, and this is a minor thing, but it's such a good analogy for just life and consequences in general. So he had a habit of tipping his chair backward in class. And the teacher stopped me one day, and I was up there for PTO or something, and the teacher stopped me and said, hey, listen, Zach's tipping his chair in class. I'm really worried he's going to fall over. And I said, oh, no worries. I'll address it. Don't worry about it. So he comes home and I give him the lecture and I say, hey, Zach, let's not tip our chair in class. He goes, oh, no problem, Mom. I got this. No problem at all. And then I forget about it because, of course, I told him, don't we tell children they just obey and do what you say, right?
Tell them the ones, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was out of sight, out of mind. I thought, oh, of course he's going to listen and not tip his chair anymore. So I saw the teacher in the hallway again, maybe a couple weeks later, and I said, hey, is Zach tipping his chair in class? Has that been resolved? Of course it has been resolved. And she said, actually, no. If anything, it's worse.
My gosh.
And I said, oh, this will be addressed. So Zach came home that day and I said, Zach, I need you to write me a 250 word essay on why you should not tip your chair in class.
Okay.
And he's like, Mom, this is so embarrassing. Like, why am I writing an essay? And I said, well, I just need you to understand. I need you to communicate to me why you should not tip the chair in class. Like, why is Mom making a big deal about this? Why is the teacher making a big deal? So he sat down and I said, and I'd like it 5 paragraphs, you know, a beginning, 3 paragraphs, 3 supporting paragraphs, and a conclusion. Uh-huh. So he writes the essay, and then I take the essay and I fold it up and I put it in an envelope. And the next day, as he's headed off for school, I said, oh, by the way, I want you to give this to your teacher.
Okay.
And if you tip your chair in class again, then I feel like the teacher should have you read the essay to the other students in the class, so everyone understands why it's not a good idea to tip the chair.
Okay.
And he said, Mom, I am not going to tip my chair at all. Oh my gosh, you are so embarrassing me. And I said, well, you just hand this to your teacher. And by the way, I'm also emailing your teacher to let her know, just in case it gets lost or you forget or the teacher will know that you have it. So I want you to hand it to her. And if she sees you tipping your chair, then you need to share your knowledge in your classmates. So sure enough, a day goes by, he doesn't tip his chair, a little bit goes by, he doesn't tip his chair, and then one day he forgets and he tips his chair. The teacher hands him the essay and he stands up in front of the assorted classmates.
Oh my gosh.
And reads the essay on why people should not tip their chairs in class. And you know what? He never tipped his chair again.
That's amazing.
And so that's a minor thing. I mean, tipping your chair, like, let's be honest, there are major things in this world.
Right.
But if you can get them when they're tipping the chair, if that's your battle, uh-huh. the other battles are easier.
Okay.
Because they've understood that's a not a good behavior. Here are the consequences. And not only here are the consequences, here's the consequences that fit what you're doing. They're okay. helping you to understand why you shouldn't be tipping your chair.
Yes. So when, I mean, I'm sure there's some things that they do that you have more concern about than other things. And how do you, in your own self, not like freak out internally and give too harsh of consequences just out of fear?
I never freak out.
Oh, that is so good to hear.
I have everything with grace.
So good. And a sweet voice and cookies.
Yes, and cookies. Cookies. So good. No, I seriously, I think that there definitely are certain things. I think any behavior that I think could lead to another behavior, for example, like if you started telling small lies, that might seem on the surface like it wouldn't be that concerning. But to me, that's indicative of a bigger problem mm-hmm. and that you don't value the truth, that you don't have integrity. And so something like that might actually bother me more than tipping a chair in class. Like, I right. think there are different levels. And I think one thing that I learned, and I kind of learned it the hard way, is my first instinct is to give way too much of a punish. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. I'm like, I'm going to say, and that phone, you know, it's done, it's trash, it's over with, you know? And, yeah. but I think that when I see a behavior or I see something, I have to take a step back and I have to take a pause moment
okay.
before I hand out the punishment, before I hand out the consequences
okay.
for that action, because it's in the pausing that it helps me to determine, you know, there's a bunch of things like how serious is the offense? How many times have they been asked to stop doing it? You know, does this in fact consequence fit what has happened? Because the problem is if you give super giant consequences for minor infractions, then where do you go from there?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like writing the essay. I'm really big on writing essays, by the way. My kids are excellent writers because they have written many an essay. Short lives.
Okay. Yeah. And then it just erodes the relationship, right? Because you both know when you're overreacting.
Yeah. Agreed. 100%. I'm a big believer in apologizing. When I've overreacted in a situation, I'll be the first one, you know, after a breathing time where we both, you know, go to our own rooms and think about it, I'll be the first one to come back. Because if I feel like I've reacted in anger or I feel like I've said a harsh word, I will take a moment, pause, and I will apologize for what I've done.
So important for our kids to see that.
And then I think when the kids see you do that, then they understand. You know, I think sometimes I don't want to be right. I want to be their mother. I want to help them. So being right is less important to me than building a relationship with my kid.
Yeah, it's so hard because you think, well, I'm the parent. I'm supposed to be right. You know, it's so hard being a grown up. Why were we so excited to get here?
Right? Right. I'm with you on that one.
So how do you handle their attitudes? Do you just let it go?
No.
How do you handle it? Because the way I handle it is I get an attitude too, and then we're both six, you know?
I think that respect is very important. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the thing that, as far as attitude goes, that's the number one thing I look for, because I think that they need to respect my authority as a parent. They mm-hmm. need to respect and understand that I have their best interest at heart. I mean, my only hope, my only desire, my only wish is that they would go out into the world and be productive human beings. And so when I see an attitude of disrespect or not an appreciation, like a lack of appreciation for what they've been given, mm-hmm. and well, I mean, how lucky they are that I'm their mother. No, seriously. I mean, I think that is probably the thing that I address the most. And that's when I get on that soapbox and we have the 20-minute lecture on the way to Walmart.
Okay. Do you then say like you need to go away for a while until you're...
When I'm talking to them about it, I give them very specific examples. Like,
okay,
in this situation, you responded like this.
Okay.
What do you think of that choice? What do you think of how you responded? And they usually say, well, I don't have a problem with that. Why? And I say, well...
Interesting.
Shocking that you would disagree with my assessment of the situation. But I say, let's look, because I think sometimes, at least myself as a parent, if you speak in too big of generalities, like watch your attitude, don't be disrespectful, that's hard to translate, especially to a teenager.
Yeah. So concrete's really helpful.
Yes, the concrete. So it's almost like you have to catch it in the moment.
Okay.
And remember, but those kind of discussions work best if you're not upset as the mom. If you can go into it maintaining composure and, you know, having your words actually make sense.
I know. Because it is hard to make sentences that make sense when you're mad. And then you say the wrong word and then they laugh at you and then you're more mad.
Reach it for sure.
Yes.
Reach it.
I think that something I'm learning is that I'm oversensitive. So I'm like on high alert for disrespect. Like I almost expect it, which if you can imagine, I get more of it when I'm looking for it. It's a little bit ridiculous.
Well, and I think too, it's kind of like, I think all four of my kids, well, I don't think, I know, all four of my kids are completely different. Okay. It's like when they were tiny babies and they would have a cry, you as the mom, you knew what all those cries, you knew that this cry meant they were hungry and this cry meant that they were thirsty or this cry meant they were tired or, you know, maybe they were just bored. I don't know. But all the cries meant something different. Well, when they're teenagers, sometimes what they say isn't really what they mean. Okay. So sometimes they sound disrespectful, but because I'm their mom and I know them, I know that that's really a cry for I'm upset about this, or that's a cry for I'm angry about this. And so I think as a mom, understanding all of your children's different personalities and what makes them tick. Yeah. So sometimes how I respond to one child is not necessarily how I respond to another child because they're all different and their cries are different. And so part of it is when they're little, you're learning how to speak baby cry. Mm-hmm. And when they're older, you're learning how to speak teenager.
That's so good. Yeah. And I think if we like get out of our own, I'm always telling my kids, like, you are not the center of the universe. But then I walk around like I'm the center of the universe thinking, how are you being rude to me? You know, so I think if we sometimes suspend the judgment that they are in the wrong and go, oh, man, like you seem like you're upset. What's going on?
I mean, sometimes people ask me, like, how do you raise teenagers? What, how do you deal with things? And I say, it's the easiest and the hardest thing all at the same time, because you have to model the behavior that you want them to have, which is really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be a really, try to be the best person you know how to be, which can be super exhausting. I mean, like, sometimes when the kids get out of the car, my husband and I are like, oh, let's just sit down and be a little imperfect right now.
That's so funny. Well, that makes me want to talk about your book.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you wrote a book called Close to Amazing, Finding the Beauty in Imperfection. And so I'm just going to paraphrase and tell me if I'm wrong, but you made a transition that a lot of us dream of where you are busy and you live in the city and you just move to the country and slow it the heck down.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
That's a great. Okay, we're done. That was a great synopsis. Okay. You've already explained it. I don't even need to talk about it.
So that was 5 years ago. Is that accurate?
No, it was actually 10 years ago.
Okay, because you're about page 5, so you need to update
Yes. So the book starts off, we're sitting in a church, and actually I'm redecorating the church in my mind and wondering if blue carpet was a really good design choice. And I'm wondering if we should add stones to the back wall by the baptistry, you know, because I'm trying not to listen to the sermon because the sermon was called Jump. And so it kind of walks you through that moment in the pew sitting in church. And by the way, an amazing outfit, like totally amazing outfit, which I describe in great detail in the book. And it takes you from that moment of the jump and the reasons why we jumped and the path that really God directed, how he made everything work out and really it fell in place.
Okay.
And how we jumped. We literally left Dallas, Texas, the Metroplex, the amazing, wonderful Metroplex with things called restaurants and like where you could get behind the wheel of your car and drive through a lane and a lady handed you a Diet Coke out of the window.
You don't have that where you are. You're like,
no!
That. Ladies, I want to take a moment to tell you about Canvas People. They take your favorite photo memories and they turn them into art for you to enjoy every day. We are moms. We take 10 million pictures of the cutest humans that we know, and then we lose them when we drop our phones in the toilet. Right? There's a better way, friends. I have their hexagon canvases on my wall, and everybody who comes over wants to stop and talk about them because they're amazing. Canvas People has served over 1 million customers, so you know that it's a quality product. It's made of high quality canvas, and it's made in the United States, which I love. They ship fast, and the finished product is spot on. Canvas People is offering Mom Struggling Well listeners this deal. It's an 11 by 14 canvas, which is really big, for free if you just pay shipping. These are usually $69.99, and you get it for free, 90 free. So, to get your free 11 by 14 canvas, go to canvaspeople.com and enter promo code GONE at checkout. So that's canvaspeople.com, enter promo code GONE. Now, this is limited time, so pretty soon it will be gone. So go ahead and do that today. How did you find the place you ended up?
Well, we actually had been looking for a while. We had been looking for a long time. Because my husband's a pharmacist and we wanted to buy a small independent pharmacy and really take our family out of the busy of the Metroplex, and not just that area. I'm just talking in general. I mean, there was a lot of pressure. There was a lot of competition. There were, you know, people that had cell phones and they were in kindergarten, you know?
Yeah.
And so we were kind of rebelling against that. And this business opportunity kind of in the middle of nowhere in Kentucky fell into our lap. You know, we listened to the sermon and we really just took a step out on faith, and we jumped from Dallas to a county where in the entire county that we live in, the county, not the city, there are no stoplights.
Wow.
Now, hold on. There are two blinking lights, but one of them is broken. So
okay.
I don't know if you're supposed to yield or not yield or
what's confusing.
Going on there. But there's no drive-through Diet Cokes in the whole county. You could go into like the gas station.
So do you know everybody? Like you see everybody and you know them?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. That part I love. Well, it took me a long time to know everybody. They all knew immediately who we were because we're like the out-of-towners.
Did they accept you?
There were some growing pains. There were definitely some growing pains. Okay. I think one of the most important lessons, kind of takeaways from the book, and something that I talk about is, I think when, you know, we felt God calling us to move here and we felt God calling us to jump, in my mind, I was going to move to the middle of this rural area and I was going to bring all my big city ways and, you know, my fabric covered lampshades and my sisal rugs and, you know, my velvet pants.
Nice.
I was gonna be something.
You really,
and I was gonna show them how it was done. And there's a story in the book where I realize we weren't there. We didn't move to the country. God didn't bring us to the country for the lessons that we were going to teach them.
Uh-huh.
He brought us here for the lessons that we were going to learn.
Okay. I mean, what was amazing about it? Was it as amazing as you thought?
You mean the jump or the house, the city?
The whole move, were you like, oh, this is better than we had hoped? Like, what's different than you thought?
I think there were moments that were way better. I mean, for example, one of the things that I always dreamed about is when you live in, you know, a city, land is a precious commodity. You don't have a lot of land to run around in. You don't go out at night and go, man, look at the Big Dipper up there. And, you know, the crickets are chirping. And because you can't see the Big Dipper from the giant flashing fast food restaurant sign that's going on. So, but here where we live on 13 acres. And many is the night I go and sit with my kids and my family and we laugh and we talk and sit on the back porch and you look up and it's like stars layered upon stars, layered upon stars. That's one of the things I thought was going to happen when we moved, but if that's way better, like the family bonding and the fact moving your kids away from, you know, a lot of the distractions that were taking place where we lived before and kind of plopping them in the middle of country where they're running through the creek and, you know, hanging out in the backyard and jumping on the trampoline and doing cartwheels in the middle of the yard. That all was amazing. Okay. I think the part that I missed, you know, that really kind of tears my heart sometimes is we moved away from family. And I didn't realize how important, I didn't think the whole thing through. And I kind of talk about that in the book, about how important it was, how important family is, you know, extended family to support your kids.
Yeah, for sure. So not all of us like have that opportunity, you know. I was actually just in a town a little bit more rural than the town I was in today. I just drove to a couple towns over and I thought, oh man, this just really does seem like a kind of a fun situation. So, but that's not what's happening with us right now. So how do you tell people ways that they can have like a taste of that in the life they currently have?
I think that there's something in all of our lives. I think everybody, I mean, jumping from Dallas to the middle of a place where they don't have stoplights is, that's pretty drastic. Mm-hmm. That's a jump with like all capital letters with like hearts and stars and exclamation points around it. That's a jump. But I don't think that necessarily you have to jump like that to jump. I think there are things that we want to accomplish that we wish that we would do, and we sit and we wait and we think about it and we never actually do it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, this is a really silly analogy, but you know when your dishwasher is clean and the dishes are in the dishwasher, uh-huh, and you know they need to be emptied,
uh-huh,
and you think about emptying them, you walk by and stare at the dishwasher and think, I need to empty that dishwasher. And then, you know, a few hours goes by, I probably should empty that dishwasher. And then, yeah, you know, you spend probably 30 minutes thinking about emptying the dishwasher. And then when you actually empty it, it's like 1.5 seconds. I mean, you can clear that thing out, you know, unless you have too much Tupperware in there. But, you know, I mean, you could clear out a dishwasher in under 2 minutes for sure.
Yeah.
So sometimes we spend so much time thinking about what we should do instead of actually doing it.
Okay.
And I think that one of the things I learned from the jump, one of the lessons I took away, is that sometimes the actual, it's the first step that's the scariest. Like actually stepping out on faith and doing whatever it is. Like maybe it would be starting a podcast. Maybe it would be speaking at a conference. Maybe it would be running for office in your kid's PTO. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, whatever your it is, that you're starting a blog. I mean, I can think of, go on and on and on. And I think we're so scared that sometimes we just sit and we think about it. We don't actually jump.
Okay.
Because sometimes the thinking about it is a lot easier than actually taking that foot out, taking that step.
Yeah. And sometimes though, for me, I think I maybe just have a lot of anxiety, but it also is like a really nervy, anxious place, the thinking about it. But when you just do it, then it's much less, it's behind you, right? And so you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad.
You know, we definitely, when we moved, I think that, you know, there were things that we planned out and things that, especially financially, that was a huge part of the equation. Like, how are we going to make it? You know, but there was a lot where I just didn't think too much about it. I just did it.
Okay.
And sometimes that works out amazing. And sometimes, not so much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so then is that when you started writing the blog, was when you moved out there?
Yes, yes. So see, it's kind of like when I look back now, I could see God's plan in the whole jump. But at the time, so we move here, we renovate the farmhouse, we gut the farmhouse from beginning, top to bottom, bathrooms, kitchens. I mean, stripped 15 rooms of wallpaper, like it was crazy.
Wow.
And when I finished, I mean, I sat back, I reclined in my couch in my, you know, newly painted living room and said, I'm ready for the public. You know, anyone would like to come visit me, I'm available. I've got sweet tea. I've got a porch. I've got, you know, super cute gray paint on the walls, and nobody came.
Okay. And you meant people in your town?
Yeah. People were busy. They had their own lives. They had things going on. There's, in a rural area, you know, there's a lot of driving that's involved. You don't really work maybe next to your house. There's a lot of time that you're spending on the road and spending out of pocket, and people just didn't have as much free time as where I moved from. And so I was lonely.
Interesting.
I was lonely. I was by myself and I had this house and I thought, okay, I'm kind of by myself and I'm kind of sad. I'm kind of lonely here. All me and my farmhouse.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm just going to try this blogging thing. Like, I'm going to see how this goes. And I literally just, I started the blog and, you know, here we are.
And you mainly tell stories about things that happen in your family, or like, what's your...
Well, it's interesting. I started, when I was going to write the blog, I was going to be like super fancy decorator. Like I was going to say fancy articles like how to hang your chandelier above your dining room table, how far, how high to hang it, or like what types of rugs go best in a farmhouse setting. Like those.
I like the voice you say when you talk that. I mean, I just feel like that's really good for a fancy blogger.
That's a fancy voice. Okay.
Just really is.
That was
fancy.
Only for you and your podcast.
Thank you.
Free of charge. Okay. And so this was this fancy blog I was writing. And so I knew I had read some other decorating blogs, and I knew that they had these amazing pictures. And I thought, I have a camera that you like is yellow and you throw it away at Walgreens after you put it in. So I don't take pictures. I don't do anything. So I hire a photographer to come out to the house and take pictures to start this blog.
Okay.
And he comes out to the house. He takes all these pictures. They show up. He sends them to my computer. I'm like, oh, wait until the world sees these pictures. Like, these are the most amazing pictures of a house I've ever seen in my life. And so I remember December 9th, 2011, sitting down at the computer to write the first post, which was going to be, in a super fancy voice, how to accentuate your Christmas decor with neutrals. And
very nice.
So there I had my gray living room. I had all my neutral Christmas decor, and I had this picture. I sat down and I looked at the picture, and there underneath my Walmart Christmas tree were these giant plastic feet, which he had used the wide angle lens. So the feet were like, sticking into the living room. I totally forgot the tree skirt, like totally left it off. And I thought, I cannot write a fancy decorating blog with Walmart tree feet. Like, that's not acceptable. So the first post is literally like, hey, you know, my name's Carianne. I live in a farmhouse. I forget tree skirts. And
I love it.
Nice to meet you.
That's what people really want to see, I think.
Yeah. So the blog is all about it. There's DIYs, there's home decor, there's room befores and afters, and then there's stories, like tons of stories.
Okay. So has it been, was it kind of therapeutic as you were lonely to kind of write?
Yes. I mean, I didn't really write a lot before I had a blog. I didn't write. Okay. And now I've written a book, like who knew? But it was just an incredible community. In blogging, I found online friends and, you know, people that liked exactly what I liked. Like, they had farmhouses too, and they were renovating, and they understood when you find something in the trash, you know, you can't overlook it. Like, you got to take it and
yeah,
you know, shake its hand and bring it home and introduce it to the family, you know? So
I love it.
So yeah, there was a lot of that, and it was therapeutic. It was, in a way. And I had no idea how much the blog would grow. And I had no idea all the opportunities that would come as a result of that first post where I didn't even have a tree skirt.
Yes. What's the most random opportunity you've had? And it makes me think, as I ask that question, one time, because I started a blog, you know, several years. First, I had a blog, then I had an Etsy shop, and now I have a podcast. So there's been several iterations. But at one point, I got a chance to go to, and I don't watch TV, and I certainly don't watch kids' TV, like Nickelodeon, or I've never had cable. I mean, I don't even know. But I got invited to a kids' TV network Halloween, and I'm not really a Halloween person, bash, where I got to photograph people on the red carpet, but it was purple. I don't know why it was a purple carpet. It doesn't have the same ring to it. But so, and I'm not a photographer, so they flew me to Los Angeles to photograph a kids' Halloween TV special. I was like, what is happening here? This has nothing to do with what I am, but it was really fun.
Yeah, well, I cannot top that. That is definitely
so random.
But if anyone's listening to this podcast and they need someone to fly out to Los Angeles, like,
I love kids' TV. Send me.
That is random,
very random
for sure. But yeah, that's the thing with blogging, or, you know, online podcasts, or just the online world in general, is I think that the possibilities are endless. I mean, I'm kind of like the blog cheerleader. I think everybody should have a blog or a podcast or some sort of platform, because I think in today's world, it's a great way to get your message out there, whatever your message is.
Okay.
I think it's a great way to get it out there.
They're certainly fun. You meet a lot of really fun people.
That's right, for sure.
Okay, so tell me your self-care strategy. I thought that was so interesting. And so I want you to share what you said you do when you need a little time for yourself. Do you remember what you said?
No.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. So you said you like to get coffee and read magazines at the library. Was that true when you said that?
Yes. I'm a big believer. I'm kind of very thrifty. As you can tell, I'm shopping the trash. I'm shopping yard sales. Like, I actually have a tour on the blog, just a yard sale tour, where I can show off everything I bought at yard sales and what it looks like now. And so I started this, I don't know, I think back when my kids were littler and it was just kind of an escape, like there was story time. And so I would literally go to the magazine section where they have every magazine under the sun that you don't want to pay the however much, $7.95 or however much they are now.
Yeah.
And I would just sit there, you know, and then I would take notes, I would get ideas, I would get inspired. And it was like a way to, it was free. It was a way to lose myself in being creative right before I had to go and, you know, start schlepping out the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah, that's so good. I got to be honest, I did not know magazines were at the library.
Oh,
I know.
Well, this is your lucky day.
I'm ashamed of myself.
That I've introduced you to that because it is quite the, you know, they have story time. A lot of times they have super fun kids activities at the library.
Yeah.
And, you know, I go and then I'm there in case they need me, but I'm over in the magazine section just sitting and reading, and our library lets you bring coffee in. So
yeah, that sounds so fun. Okay. So we are out of time, but I have to ask you, what can you not stop talking about?
What can I not stop talking about?
Yes.
Oh.
Do you remember what you told me?
No.
You're so funny.
That was like 2 weeks ago.
I know, it was a long time ago. You said Grammarly.
Oh my gosh. That is literally life-changing. Have you ever used it before?
No, huh?
It's free for starters, so that's brilliant. And so what you do is an app that you can download onto your device.
Okay.
And literally, no matter where you're typing, whether you're typing in Facebook, whether you're typing an email, whether you're typing, I think probably in emails I type to you, a little red line will happen under your word if you've used it incorrectly with grammar or you've spelled it incorrectly.
Okay.
A little red line, and you hover your cursor over that word, several options will pop up and you just click it.
Okay.
So, but it happens everywhere. It's like if you're in Pinterest, if you're in Facebook, wherever you are, Grammarly follows you on that device. So
helping you sound smart.
I know it is great, but I kind of disagree with Grammarly sometimes because I use the word super a lot, like super fun or super amazing. And Grammarly does not appreciate that. Like,
okay.
Doesn't like any supers.
Okay. So you just ignore it.
Yeah. So I put Grammarly in its place.
I'm the boss here.
I showed who's boss.
I can delete you in 1 second.
I know. You're out. You're done.
So funny. Oh, man. Well, it was so fun talking to you.
Yes.
I'm excited to read your book. I think that sounds like a really fun adventure.
Oh, you're so sweet. This was a blast. I super appreciate it. I super appreciate it.
All right, so let's think about this. What stood out to you? What small change can you make this week that will help you to struggle well? Kari-Ann said that our relationships with our kiddos are more important than us being right. That is such a hard pill for me to swallow because I always think I'm right. So they need to understand that, you know? But sometimes just staying quiet and going, oh, that's interesting. I don't have my game face on or my good answer for that yet because I'm still used to trying to make sure that everybody knows I'm right. But that's a great thing for me, at least, to work on this week. She talked about having the punishment fit the crime. I loved her essay writing for then leaning back in the chair. I thought that was beautiful. Yeah, I don't know. I loved writing essays when I was little, like, you know, in junior high and high school. It's probably just a weirdo. But if I ask my daughter to write something, it is like such a torture. I don't really know why. If you have kind of a tricky time telling what should be the consequence of something your kids are doing, I really loved the book Love and Logic. You can find that in the show notes if you're interested in getting that. Kari-Ann mentioned that the first step when you're going to jump into something new, the first step of it's really the scariest. And it made me think of when I started this podcast, I had the microphone for a long time and I just kind of stared at the box because I felt like if I took it out of the box, then it was actually happening. So I get it. The first step is scary, but if God has put something on your heart, if you've ran it by some people and gotten some wisdom and everyone seems like, yeah, this is a go, like you got green lights all around, don't think too long about it. I mean, don't be ridiculous, but don't also do nothing just because you're afraid of the first step. I eventually opened my microphone box and listened to the glory that you're beholding because of it. Do you know what I'm saying? The sheer glory of it all. Just kidding. Okay, so she also talked about self-care at the library with the magazines. Did not even know they had magazines. So maybe you can try that. All right, ladies. So for real, if you have any questions about the instructor training, send me a message on Instagram at Mom Struggling Well or on Facebook, also Mom Struggling Well. I'd also love to hear what you thought about the show. Any topics you want covered. It really helps to show out if when you shop on Amazon for all your Christmas presents that you know you're about to shop for, if you first went to momstrugglingwell.com/Amazon, that'll take you to Amazon, but use the show's affiliate link and it helps kick a couple of pennies back towards the cost of producing this show. Let me go ahead and pray for us and then you can be on your merry way. God, I thank you for these women. I thank you for technology that makes it to where I can bring all these lovely guests into the ears of these women and my brother. My brother sometimes listens. Lord, you already know this, but we are tired. And sometimes it feels like we don't even know if we're doing a good job or how to do a good job, or we just don't even want to do a good job anymore. So God, would you strengthen and encourage these precious moms? Would you help them to know how very kind your eyes are to them? Would you help them to feel how near you are? Would you impress on them that they are seen and that you're pleased? God, give them the wisdom they need to parent their children well, to love their husbands if they have one. God, we love you and we trust you and we want to trust you more. In Jesus' name.